Hey, I was just checking the weather forecast for Thursday, and it doesn't look like it'll be the most ideal day, but we're getting to the point where we really need to go outside. So when you're selecting your wardrobe Thursday morning, when you get up, get something that's kind of warm, and it looks like we might get sprinkled on a little bit, but that's probably as bad as it would be. What we're going to do is work our way down towards the Snake River, and generally where we're going, this is, it's called Hawaii grade, and it's probably going to be, I'm guessing, you know, 5 to 10 degrees warmer than here in Moscow, and it's drier too, so we'll make do with whatever conditions there are. Hopefully on the way in here you picked up the next homework assignment. It's not going to be due until, well, 2 weeks from today, so it's after spring break. And what you're going to do is use the 5 soils that you selected for, I think it was homework assignment number 2. And what I want you to do is, you'll probably find most of this information on the official series descriptions, but you're going to look these up again, and the difference is this time you're really going to be paying attention to the diagnostic horizons and features that are present in these soils, and the moisture and temperature regimes, which is what we're talking about now and Thursday. And then also take the classification and try and dissect that a little bit to see where all these things come out. So you might want to get started on that because it's due right after spring break. And I know most people probably won't be spending spring break working on homework, so good to get started. How many people are going someplace exotic? Where's that?
Hawaii.
Hawaii. That's pretty exotic. Any other exotic places? Orofino? Ritzville? Any? No? Huh. I guess it's undergrads that do all the traveling mostly. I mean freshmen, sophomores, because I the 205 course, usually about half the class is going to Mexico or Arizona or someplace like that. I don't know how they manage that. You guys are more serious students, obviously. Okay, anything else? Oh, I've got your tests, and I'll give those back at the end of class. Most of you did better on this one than you did the first one. The average was a little bit higher, so I'll give them back, look them over, and if you have questions, concerns, anything like that, come by and talk to me, okay? All right, if you remember back last Thursday, we started talking about diagnostic horizons and features, and we went through, what we got started on were what we call the epipedons, and these are the surface diagnostic horizons. And we got through 3 of them, Moloch, Umbric, and Anthropic. And I thought I might just take a minute here to quickly review those and show you the images that I've got. And if you remember, these 3, Moloch, Umbric, Anthropic, they're all similar in what respect?
High organic matter.
Okay, they've got relatively high organic matter. They're thick and dark. The big difference is with the Moloch epipedon, it's got a base saturation greater than 50%. Meaning it's got relatively large amounts of calcium, magnesium, and potassium. This is the type of diagnostic horizon or epipedon you'd expect to find in a grassland soil. Here's 2 examples of Moloch epipedons. We said they had to be, most cases, at least 25 centimeters thick, and that would be somewhere right about there on these scales. And you can see how dark those soils are. And I would guess, in the case of the one on the left, the Moloch epipedon probably extends down to about there. And the one on the right probably down to about there. So it's not just the surface horizon, or what you might designate as the A1, but it's all, that entire upper part of the soil that meets those conditions. Okay? So there's the Moloch epipedon. Here's the example of an umbric. It looks exactly the same. The only way that you would know the difference is if you knew something about the environment. And we said that the umbric epipedons are different only in the fact that they have lower base saturation, and that really translates into being more highly leached. So around here anyway, that would translate into an environment where you get more annual precip. like higher elevations. And you can see this picture here on the right, this big open meadow. This is up on up towards Grandfather Mountain. And that probably would be a good spot to find an umbric epipedon around here. And here's an example of an anthropic epipedon. This one's from the East Coast in Maryland, near Chesapeake Bay. And it turns out it's an ag field now, but apparently it had been an occupation site once upon a time. And you see all these white things that are kind of scattered in the surface there? Those are shell fragments. So this was probably some sort of a kitchen midden where food was prepared. The shellfish were scraped out and cooked or prepared somehow. And so you end up with a lot of phosphorus from the shells, bones, other materials. And remember, that's really the only difference here, is that there's a lot of phosphorus in these anthropic epipedons. Okay, any questions about those three? Remember, Moloch around here is probably the first one you'd want to think about in terms of an epipedon, because it would really be common. Okay, well, I gave you the assignment of going through the rest of these and trying to just come up with at least a general description, because I mentioned we're not going to get bogged down on details and these things. So the next two that are on here, pholistic and histic, I would kind of group them together because they're very similar and that they're both organic material. Who found a good definition of pholistic? Hillary?
I just have saturated for less than 30 days, otherwise the same as histic.
Okay, so it's a well-drained organic surface. And there is a minimum fitness, because otherwise you'd be hard-pressed to distinguish between something like a forest litter layer and an organic surface. And so I think the pholistic epipedons have to be at least 15 centimeters thick. But the idea here is it's a well-drained organic surface horizon. And then how about histic epipedon? Brian, what'd you come up with? Okay, Hannah? What?
High in organic matter, thick, wet, and dark. That was what I had.
Thick, wet, and dark. Okay. The distinction here, these are not mineral materials. They're organic, right? So it's a minimum of 20 to 30% organic matter by weight, or 12 to 18% organic carbon. And the histic epipedon is generally going to be on a poorly drained soil, like a peat land soil, or one that you would find in a wetland environment. And they have to be at least 20 centimeters thick, and usually it's about 20 to 40 centimeters. So you're talking about a fairly thick type of a surface on there. It's not just a forest litter layer. Okay. The two, I'd say that the histic epipedons are going to be more common. And I've got one example here, one example of each. The one on the left is one of these shallow organic soils that I showed you earlier in the semester down in Craters of the Moon on these basalt flows. And it's just organic material down to that basalt bedrock. So essentially the entire soil is this organic material. But this would be a well-drained environment, all right? The one on the right is from a wetland, and this is up in northern Idaho. It's a peatland type of environment. And it's kind of difficult to tell, but this, as much as you can see exposed there, is all peat type material, what we would probably designate as OI material. And you can tell, I think, looking at it, it's pretty wet. So this would be the wet version of a histic epipedon.
Jack, how is that different than a forest litter layer?
Thickness. Okay. What's the thickest forest litter layer you've ever seen? Yeah, usually it's just going to be a maybe 3-4 inches, something like that. The difference here, obviously, this is not much thicker, the pholistic, but if you read the fine print in soil taxonomy, and there's a lot of it, it talks about, you know, a thickness of such and such ore to a lithic or paralithic contact, and we'll get to that in a minute, but basically that means rock of some kind. But generally these things have to be fairly thick. And that's what distinguishes them from a litter layer. Okay, the next two on here, or actually the next one, Plagon epipedon. Laura, what'd you find for that?
I have that it's a man-made layer, 50 centimeters or more thick, produced by a long continued manuring.
Okay, man-made surface horizon resulting from long-term activity, primarily manure additions. I don't know if we have any of these in the United States, because generally the ones that I'm familiar with are in Europe, and these are areas where it's been in agriculture for centuries. So you get this material that gets piled up, and a lot of times if you were mapping out the soils that have these Plagon epipedons, you'd find that the boundaries of those soils probably follow the boundaries of a farm field. So they may be rectangular shaped rather than what we're more accustomed to. The root Plagon comes from the German word meaning sod, and I guess I wouldn't worry too much about these because we don't have them here. And I don't, maybe if you ever go to Europe you can see some, but around here you're going to be hard pressed to find one. Okay, the what's that question? I've got one example, and it's not a very good picture. Actually, this one is in, this picture on the left is soil. This is out of Soil Taxonomy. And you can see this entire bunch of stuff up here, and it's about 3 feet of material, is all this Plagon epipedon. And I think if you read the description, they talk about how you might actually see some different layers in there where it representing different additions of stuff. Here's another picture of one, and I think the Plagon epipedon, I can't read the scale on here, but it's probably this entire upper dark part right there. Yeah?
Well, on some playground areas, and I was spreading manure all across the fields.
Mm-hmm.
Would you get anything like that?
You could. The thing about the manure, though, that tends to be organic material, right? And these are not organic horizons. There's enough other stuff mixed in with them that they qualify as a mineral soil. And a lot of them have formed, it's kind of a mix of manure and soil material. Could be animal bedding that gets tossed in there, but, and usually you might even find fragments of other things as well. So it's a mix, but remember, it's not an organic type of horizon. It's actually a mineral material. So anyway, the Plagon epipedon, this may be the only time you ever see a picture of one. But okay, the last, or the next one on here, melanic. Cody.
I put down 30 centimeters or thicker of black horizon at or near the top of the surface that has an andeic soil property.
Okay, the key here is that it's thick and dark. Sounds kind of like a malic epipedon, right? The difference is this is formed in, or this melanic epipedon has andic properties, meaning that it's associated with an andesol, or it's more likely developed in volcanic ash or some sort of a similar material. So think of it as kind of the volcanic ash version of a malic epipedon. And it is thick, and the root in there is Greek for melos, which means black, dark. Again, not that common. I've got an example here. This is a melanic epipedon from Central America. And here's the meter depth down here at the bottom. It's not a very good picture. It doesn't project well. But you can see how it really is almost black down to about 70 or 80 centimeters. So this would be what a melanic epipedon looks like, just very, very dark. Okay, last but not least, ochric epipedon. Cinda.
I don't have the paper.
Okay, did you? Yeah, use his.
Any horizon
Trust
that
me.
Fails to meet criteria for any of the other epipedons.
Great, so this is the default category. And I mentioned the other day, every soil has an epipedon. And if it's none of the ones that have been talked about to this point, it ends up being an ochric epipedon. So typically, they tend to be lighter colored, they're thin, generally, and they just lack any of the other qualities that, that we've had. And I've got a few examples here. I think you've seen most of these soil profiles before, but they're, you notice the profile here on the left. You don't really have a thick, dark surface. It looks like it, there's definitely an A horizon there, but it's not thick enough to be a mollic epipedon. The profile here on the right, the podzolized soil, again, a little bit of an A horizon, but not a thick, dark surface. So by default, they end up being ochric epipedons. And then here, a couple more. The profile on the left, you might be hard-pressed to find an A horizon in there. Yeah.
So this is basically like the subordinate W and a B horizon?
No. Well, conceptually, but remember, this is referring to the surface. So it doesn't meet any of the other requirements.
I just meant like in the sense of like, if all else fails, call it this.
You can think of it like that. Okay. But don't confuse it with a B horizon.
No, I didn't mean it was a, I know, we're good.
Okay, all right. The one on the right, here's one of our volcanic ash mantled soils. Oh, by the way, that question on the exam about the allophane and the allophane and the ferry hydrite on the car, I'll tell you, you guys scare me as potential jurors, because quite a few of them told me that I don't think anyone said that the suspect was lying necessarily or that was guilty, but a lot of you, I think some of you put it correctly when you said that he may be lying. It was also interesting how most people assumed that the suspect was a he. I don't think anyone assumed it was a she. I don't know what to make of that. But anyway, this would be the kind of soil that you might find up on Moscow Mountain that body would have been buried in. And I think about all you could surmise from that question on the test, given the information that you had, was that the car had been somewhere where there are andesols or volcanic ash soils. And whether the suspect drove it there, we would need some more questioning, right? Okay, but here, two more examples. Very thin, dark up here. You never even think about a mollic epipedon. And this soil here, like a lot of forest soils, you don't have a very well expressed A horizon. And that's why in many forested environments you end up with an ochric epipedon, because you've got a litter layer there, and then you've got usually a pretty thin or relatively light colored A horizon. So it does not qualify as anything else, and it's ochric by default.
So
kind of like the BW horizon.
So on the left right there, you're not saying that's a continuous A horizon?
Well, I don't know. Probably this upper part, it looks like a plow layer, like an AP horizon. And so if you still call it an A horizon, but it would be an ochric epipedon. Just because it's not thick, it's not dark, and so on. I think that one on the left is an A over C type of profile. Okay, so any questions about epipedons? So remember, every soil's got one, and around here, the most likely candidates are going to be mollic, and if you get up in the forest, it's probably going to be an ochric epipedon, most likely. If you get into a wetland, what kind might you have? Yeah, maybe a histic. All right, well, now if we go down to what I've labeled under number two, subsurface diagnostic horizons. There's a bunch of them here, and I think the easiest way to approach this is to not get hung up on the details, but just kind of have a good idea of what sort of horizon designation would most likely be associated with one of these, and just general properties. So who found agric horizon? Emily, did you? Okay, yeah, directly under an AP horizon. I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever seen one of these. And if I have, I didn't know it. So I wouldn't really worry about it. In fact, I'm going to take it off the list next time. How about Albic? Now, this is one I would pay attention to.
White-gray color due to sand and silt. clay and oxidized, removed, no light color from volcanic ash or something like that.
Okay, so light colored, and remember, because these are quantitatively defined, if you go and read about it, it's going to give you the requirements. Let's not worry about them, but it's light colored in that it would probably be something you would describe as a white or a light gray color. All right? And so it's most likely going to be equivalent to what sort of horizon? An E horizon, yeah. And here again, not E horizons qualify as albic diagnostic horizons, but I can't imagine a case where you'd have an albic diagnostic horizon that was not an E horizon. So light-colored eluvial horizon or E horizon. How about argillic?
It's an alluvial horizon. It's a
beautiful Okay, so it's a zone of clay accumulation, and we talked about this a little bit before. A minimum of 1.2 times as much clay as the overlying horizon. And there are a few other things, like some thickness and all, but we won't get too hung up on that. But definitely put a star by it, because that's one of the more important ones, and it comes out in the classification system quite often. Okay, how about candic? K-A-N-D-I-C.
Texture finer than that of the overlaying horizon, 30+ centimeters thick, and mostly low activity clay.
Okay, what I would remember on this one, that it is a type of argillic horizon. So it's a zone of clay accumulation. The other stipulation is that it's dominated by what we call low activity clays. And this would be things like kaolinite. So it's a specialized type of argillic horizon. And the most likely horizon designation for an argillic or a candic horizon would be BT, yeah. So Dan, how about calcic? This is a tough one.
Accumulation of carbonates?
Yeah, calcium carbonate accumulation. And there, again, I think at least 15 centimeters thick. And you have to have at least 15% calcium carbonate and at least 5% more calcium carbonate than the underlying horizon. So it does represent a true accumulation of it in the soil profile. Most likely horizon designation is going to be what?
BK.
Okay, BK horizon. And how about the next one, petrocalcic?
Calcic horizon is cemented by calcium carbonate.
Okay. What would the most likely horizon designation be for it? How about a B?
BKM.
BKM or BKKM, something like that. So this is just a cemented calcic horizon, and it won't slake in water, as you saw earlier in the semester in lab. It just sits there. It stays cemented. The calcic horizon, I put a star by that because those are really common. You get into the drier parts in Washington, southern Idaho, you'll find a lot of them. Christina, how about Durapan?
Silica cemented subsurface horizon where more than 50% of the volume is cemented.
Okay, silica cemented subsurface horizon, what would the most likely designation be? All right, well, probably just what you're given there, cemented, what are you going to use? It'll be a B horizon.
Yeah.
And then the what's the subordinate distinction for cemented?
M.
And what's the subordinate distinction for silica?
Q.
So it'd be a BQM. The variety that we typically have in this region, they're more often BKQMs. There's carbonate in there as well, but... That's a durapan. I put a star by it. Frangipans, locally important, so you can put a star by it. Suzanne, what's a frangipan?
It's a horizon. It's 15 centimeters in thick. It has high bulk density. It's fragile in that, but hardly might thrive.
Okay, so a BX horizon, most likely. Brittle, dense, would be the main features. And it's one of the interesting things, this time of the year you could dig through it, but if you try it in the summertime when it dries out, you would not be able to dig through it. We'll see some of those later. Okay, Lee, how about Gypsy Horizon?
That's the combination of gypsum.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a calcic horizon in terms of the requirements, but very, very similar. You might find it in similar environments. It's just calcium sulfate, or gypsum is going to be the cementing, or not the cementing agent, just the material accumulating, which kind of, and you remember what the subordinate distinction for gypsum is?
Why?
Why, yeah, so probably a BY horizon. So what's petrogypsy? Larry?
I can print this out this morning.
Well, just from the name, petro
gypsum. From the name, I'm thinking it's going to be a thicker layer.
Well, how about a cemented gypsy horizon? So analogous to a petrocalcic, where you've got enough gypsum accumulation that it's actually cemented together, won't slake in water, and most likely designation would be a B, what's gypsum again? Y, and then it's cemented, so put an M on it. Okay, go on the next page. Placket horizon, Kendall, did you find anything for that? Okay, so it's a thin alluvial pan or some layer that contains iron and manganese and organic material. They're not that common in soils around here. Probably the most common place that you would find something that would resemble a plaque horizon around here is in the toilets in Moscow, where we've got really hard water. It's got a lot of iron in it, and you might see this reddish stuff that accumulates that is really hard to get off. Well, that's not too far removed from what a plaquic horizon would be. And generally, a horizon designation for these, you want to hazard a guess? Iron oxides and cemented? Yeah, BSM might be a possibility. How about natric horizon? Kat?
It's like an argillic soil, but also has columnar structure and more than 15% saturation of exchangeable cations.
With sodium, yeah. So this is another type of argillic horizon, but it's different from the others in that it's got high sodium content. And as you mentioned, columnar structure typically is associated with these natric horizons. And what would be the most likely horizon designation? BN, yeah. N is the subordinate distinction for natric. Okay. AJ, how about oxic? What if I told you it's most likely designated as a BO horizon? Well, would that give you any more information? Yeah, remember the residual accumulation of sesquioxides? So an oxic horizon is simply this residual accumulation of sesquioxides. There may be low activity clays associated with it as well. And one of the defining characteristics is that it's very highly weathered. And one of the criteria is that there are less than 10% weatherable minerals left in the thing. So pretty much everything that can weather out has, and what it does is it leaves behind iron and aluminum oxides and maybe some low activity clays. I put a star by it because this is a defining characteristic of what soil order? The oxisols, yeah. Okay, Bryce, how about spodic?
Alluvial humus, usually with iron and aluminum, and it can be used with albite as well.
Yeah, they often go together. If you have an albic horizon, you may have a spodic horizon underneath it. Well, by the way, a lot of people call this a spodic horizon. There's a little disagreement over pronunciation, and you know how English is, entirely inconsistent. So I say spodic, a lot of people say spodic. Call it what you want, won't matter to me. So most likely a BS or a BHS horizon. And if you read the criteria, they mention that there's twice as much secondary iron and aluminum in this spodic horizon as there is in the overlying eluvial or E horizon, that type of thing. I put a star by it because it's a defining characteristic of what soil order? The spodosols, if you want to call them that. Okay, let's see, back up here. Hillary, how about a salic horizon?
Secondary soluble salt accumulation at least 15 centimeters thick.
Okay, so you've had an accumulation of soluble salts, which normally you would designate as what?
BZ.
Yeah, BZ horizon. And it's got high electrical conductivity. So you have to measure the electrical conductivity of this thing because that tells you roughly the salt content. And they've used some thing where I use the electrical conductivity and multiply it by the horizon thickness in centimeters, and it's got a total more than 900 in order to qualify. Anyway, the point is it's a lot of salt, and it's getting up to enough salt that you might want to think about mining it, or enough salt that you certainly would notice that most plants are having a difficult time growing in it. How about sombric horizon? Yeah, you know, this is one I'd almost skip, but...
Well, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Who's got a definition? You got one, Craig, since you want to do it?
I have formed under free drainage, contains alluvial humus with a low CEC.
Okay, this is something you find in tropical and subtropical regions, and it's described as an accumulation of alluvial humus without aluminum. I'm not sure I've ever seen one of these either. I've seen a couple pictures of them, but it's not one I'd worry about. Laura, how about sulfuric?
Formed by oxidation of sulfides.
Uh-huh.
pH less than 3.5.
Yeah, so this is a very, very acidic horizon that forms from the oxidation of reduced sulfur compounds like sulfides, iron sulfides. And when those when that sulfur oxidizes, it essentially forms sulfuric acid. So you end up with these very, very acidic horizons. And as Laura said, pH of less than 3.5. The only places I know of where you find sulfuric horizons are in some of the tidal marshes in the eastern United States, and in the west, places where there's hard rock mining and some of these sulfide minerals are brought up to the surface where they start to oxidize. And I think you could get a sulfuric horizon there, a very acidic material. Okay, last but not least, cambic horizon.
I put down very fine sand. It's loamy, very fine sand, a finer texture, 15 centimeters or more thick, with some weak indication of alteration in the form of color.
Okay, weak form of alteration. What does that remind you of if you're thinking about B horizons?
W.
A BW horizon. Just like an ochric epipetum, right? But yeah, a cambic horizon is kind of, I think of it as like the BW horizon. It's where you have B horizon development, but it's not sufficient to call it a BT or a BHS or any of these other things. So almost by default, if it's not any other kind of a B horizon, it'd be a BW, and it probably would qualify as a cambic horizon. The only restriction on it is that if it's a sandy, real sandy texture, it's not going to qualify. So it has to be finer than what's called coarse sand or loamy coarse sand.
Okay, is it sandy?
No, it can't be real sandy.
No, but you get that as a sandy, which...
you could still call it a BW horizon, but it would not qualify as being a cambic
diagnostic horizon. Hey, I didn't make this up.
No, no.
I'm just the messenger here. Okay, so there's a few more that are listed here on section number three. Actually, let's go through some of the images here of these guys. Some of these you've seen before, argillic horizon, clay accumulation, and I think part of the definition is there has to be evidence of illuvial clay, as in the form of argillands and clay films. Candic horizon, these red clays of the southeastern United States tend to be candic horizons. It's a type of argillic horizon where you have kaolinitic clays and similar ones that are the dominant clay types. Natric horizon, it's the sodium version or sodium-rich version of an argillic horizon, and often characterized by this columnar structure. And because of the high sodium, it's got absolutely miserable physical properties. Really tough soils to deal with. We talk about sodic soils, some of the slick spot soils on rangelands. Many of them will have a natric horizon in them.
Yeah. How would you be able to like remedy that? Is that just like got that soil becomes like sodic like that? Is it just gone for like? Would you never be able to restore that?
Well, you can, but it's sort of a complicated two-step process, because the first thing that you have to do is get rid of a lot of that sodium, and I typically use something like gypsum calcium sulfate, and so you try and exchange all the sodium with calcium, and then once you do that, that improves the physical properties a little bit, and then you can leach it out. But they're difficult soils to work with, and they really do cause a lot of problems.
Is that still a subsurface layer, or is that at the surface there?
Oh, this picture here on the right, it's very close to the surface. There's probably about 2 or 3 inches of soil that's been dug away just to expose the top of the columns. It kind of looks like biscuits in a pan, doesn't it? Where they've all baked and they kind of run together. Okay, I put these two together, albic, spodic, because that's a common combination. So you've got these white or very light gray horizons, which qualify as albic. This would be a spodic horizon, a BH version. The one on the right would probably be a BS or BHS. Now you can find albic horizons with other types of illuvial horizons, not necessarily spodic. Sometimes you have albic horizons that might be associated with, for example, an argillic horizon, but not that common. You know, normally, I'd say this would be the most common combination, albic and spodic together. Fragipan here on the left, can't really tell much from this picture, but it starts right about here, and this is very coarse prismatic structure. It limits roots, it limits water movement, and so what happens, water comes down on top of this, stops right about here, it can't move through here very rapidly, so you develop this perched water table up above it. Real common around here. The durapan, you can see one right here. Silica and, in this case, calcium carbonate cemented. We call them BKQMs, our variety, but it's mostly silica cemented with some accessory calcium carbonate. Calcic, petrocalcic, on the right, where you see something like that, generally a calcic horizon if it meets the quantitative criteria of at least 15% calcium carbonate by weight. And then over here on the left, where it actually becomes cemented to where it won't slake in water, then you have a petrocalcic horizon. Salic horizon, the salts. You see two examples here. This is a salt crust up on the surface of the soil, probably an AZ horizon. And then this is along an irrigation canal on the right, and you can see all the salt that's precipitating out as that water is being evaporated, leaving the salts behind. Probably a BZ horizon in there. I'm not exactly sure. But anyway, these salic horizons, they've got a lot of salt associated with them. and you're generally going to see some problems. You notice this field on the right? It looks like part of it's doing pretty well, and part of it, there's not a whole lot growing there, and I suspect that's because of the salinity in the Salic horizon. Oxic horizon. Here's an example from Hawaii. This is the residual accumulation of sesquioxides. Very few weatherable minerals left in this, and just a product of intense and generally long-term weathering. And as we said, this is what is used to define oxisols. Okay, and finally, the default category, the cambic horizons. Here's three examples. The one on the left here, obviously there's some soil structure in this zone here above the bedrock. Looks like a subangular blocky structure, but it doesn't qualify as anything else. So we'd probably designate this as a BW horizon in the field. And in terms of a diagnostic horizon, it would be called a cambic horizon. Another one that's got a little bit of color development, maybe some structure in here from maybe 3 to 6 decimeters below the surface, doesn't qualify as anything else, cambic horizon. The one on the right are volcanic ash mantled soils. This reddish brown color up here that is associated with the ferry hydrite. Well, that's the color is considered significant alteration because we have had some weathering, but it doesn't qualify as any of the other types of diagnostic horizons. So by default, we call it a cambic horizon. Any questions on these? Yeah, Lee.
So a lot of these really only go with one sub-horizon designation, which is like an oxic.
Usually, yeah.
So why don't they just call it BO?
Because, remember, if you call a horizon a BO, all you're saying is that there's a residual accumulation of sesquioxides, or maybe it's bright red, okay? Remember, all of these, with the exception of cambic, because that's the default category, are quantitatively defined. And so you might recognize something in the field as a BT horizon because you think, well, there's an accumulation of clay. But it's not an argillic horizon unless it has at least 1.2 times more clay than the overlying horizon. So even though these usually, you're right, these usually, you can take any of these diagnostic horizons and features and associate them with a horizon designation, but they're not always going to be the same thing. Like I said, all argillic horizons are BT horizons, but not all BTs are argillic horizons. And it's the same with the rest of these as well. Yeah, Mateo.
In the same profile, can you have more than one diagnostic horizon?
Oh yeah, and the question is, can you have more than one diagnostic horizon? And in fact, when some of you do this next homework assignment, you're probably going to find a bunch, you might have 3 or 4, because you know you're going to have an epipet on of some kind, and in most cases you can at least have 1 or 2 subsurface horizons.
And there's some sort of hierarchy that, for example, if you have a spodic, it's a spod soil and okay, but if you have an argillic, maybe it's fine for some different order?
Well, not necessarily for an order, but what you're going to find is that these diagnostic horizons and features come out at different levels of the classification system. In some cases, they define an order. In some cases, they might define a suborder. In some cases, it may be a grade group. In some cases, it may be a subgroup. And it varies. There's no set rule there. But one of the things that you'll see is all of these terms on here, like calcic and frangipan, those roots are going to turn up in the taxonomic names that you guys are going to be working with. And so if you see fragi in like a fragi xeralf, well, you should think, fragi, that means it's got a frangipan. And that's exactly what it does mean. So it's good to kind of think of these diagnostic horizons and the roots, because these provide what we call formative elements that are strung together to come up with the taxonomic names. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Anything else on the diagnostic
horizons, subsurface diagnostic horizons. All right, well, this last category is just other diagnostic features, and I didn't include all of them here, but I did include the ones that you'll more commonly run into or the ones that might be more important. And this first one, andic properties, where do we leave off here? What are andic properties? Who was next? Laura, were you? No, Cinda?
I'll just go. Significant amounts of allophane, immunolite, ferrihydrite, or aluminum humus complex.
Okay, so these are, the andic properties are what we associate with volcanic ash parent materials generally. Any material that's ejected from a volcano, as it weathers, it forms allophane, ferrihydrite, among other things, and you end up with some fairly unique properties, and we'll talk more about those when we get into the andisol order, but the andic properties are what define the andisol order. So it's these unique properties that are related to the types of secondary minerals that form in these soils. How about aquic conditions?
Saturation with one or more horizons.
Okay, so saturation by water, and I think it probably says for a significant period of time during the year. And how would you recognize that? How would you recognize?
Color?
Yeah, color. And I think they mentioned this idea of low chroma colors. And generally, if you have chromas that are two or less, you should start thinking about a soil horizon being saturated for significant periods of time. And the aqua conditions, you know, you've got this idea of saturation, and then the reduction of iron, and then the formation of what we call redox features or redoxamorphic features, like the modeling patterns or sometimes concretions, but all of these things that are associated with wetness and anaerobic conditions. And this turns out to be pretty important as far as defining suborders. Because you can have well-drained mollisols, and then you can have poorly drained mollisols that have aquic conditions, and those are distinguished at the suborder level by these aquic conditions. How about coal, C-O-L-E? Mateo?
I have a measure of expansion and shrinkage as a soil material wets and dries, expressed as a ratio of difference between moist length and dry length of a cloth divided by length dry.
Dry, okay. And we'll get into more detail, but as Mateo said, this is just a measurement of the shrink swell ability of a soil. And as it turns out, this is one of the defining characteristics of what soil order? Verdisols, yeah, where you get a lot of shrinking and swelling. Yeah?
In the new version of the book, this goal is mentioned like bulk density divided something else. It's a different ratio.
Yeah,
that's,
it talks, and when it first introduces it, it talks about the length, but then when later on it talks about bulk density.
I'll have to take a look at that. I hope it's not. Hope it's not a mistake. Okay, how about a lithic contact? Haley.
Mine's really big, between soil and bedrock.
Well, a lithic contact would be where you're digging down and you hit an R layer, or what you've designated an R, and it's simply, you know, hard, unweathered bedrock. And if it occurs within a certain distance from the soil surface, then it's considered a diagnostic feature. How about paralithic? I skipped you. Sorry.
The boundary layer between soil and cementing layer that can be broken.
Okay, so it's essentially if you're digging down, you encounter CR material or paralithic contact. And then remember, that's the diggable or the more weathered variety. Permafrost. Dan.
Frozen stuff in the ground.
Yeah, remember, permafrost, I've got it listed here as a feature, but it's really refers to a thermal regime where something is constantly
frozen, or you look at the average annual temperature and it's below freezing. Plinthite, Craig, what's the horizon? What do you think about plinthite?
Iron-rich humus poor mixture of clay with quartz and other minerals.
Okay, so it's a same as what we call a BV horizon, V, and it's iron-rich, humus-poor, and this is the stuff that will irreversibly harden. Okay, I got to stop here. I'll, you guys gather up your